This is Ashley Hodge with the Sikkim 365 podcast coming to you bright and early. Well, not that early, but we're in Memphis. I'm joined by Kendall Kaut. We're going to break down what we saw against Colgate. We're going to look ahead to the Clemson matchup. We're going to talk about Memphis. I'm sporting a Green Beetle t-shirt. You can't see it because it's black. I've got sucked into buying one of those at our favorite sports bar last night. We were watching games. Kendall was there also for a while. Kendall, it's good to be on this with you. It was good to watch the game in person with you yesterday. We had a really good view of the action. What did you like? You know, what encourages you as we look forward to this Clemson matchup?
Actually, a couple things encourage me for sure from yesterday's game heading into tomorrow's game. First is that Jacoby Walter got his three-point shot going in the first half. He looked really sullen in the locker room after the loss to Iowa State at Kansas City. So I thought it was good to see his confidence regained. Also seemed really confident in the game afterwards. Could tell his teammates were trying to lift him up. When I asked Jalen Bridges about what went so well for Baylor, first thing he pointed out was Jacoby Walter having such a good game for his first game. And then I thought the way Baylor responded to any little adversity in that game showed a toughness maybe the team had missed this season. Go back to the TCU game in Waco. Baylor has the chance to put TCU away. Can't do it. It felt like that happened several times this season where Baylor might get up 6 or 7 points. Then either Baylor would let the opponent come back and might even lose a close game, or more often the game like the Cincinnati game in Waco get a little too tight. And so for Baylor to just say, we're putting this team away, I thought really spoke well of the Bears. When I talked to Jonathan Chamwa-Chachua in the locker room, he mentioned, we didn't look at it as Colgate was on the chest, right? John's an old guy relative to college basketball. He understands Colgate's not as good as Baylor, but right, they didn't want to go in with that mindset of, oh, it's Colgate, mess around. I think the questions that everybody's asked about the slow starts. So message board folks, you are heroes for asking these questions, because I think it's gotten to the players a little bit about the slow starts. They wanted to start fast. They did it. I thought all those things were positive. I don't have a lot of negative takeaways about yesterday. What were your positive assessments before we maybe rail against why the Memphis media wants to kill us by putting us in a box?
Yeah, I do think that I was very encouraged by the fast start. That's good to see, because as you know, when we play better competition, if you're down 14-2 at the first media, that's going to be a problem digging out of that. So that was good to see. And then the other thing that encouraged me was there was a point in the second half where the only point where I felt like Colgate had any momentum. I think they started the second half on maybe a 7-0 run, or maybe it was just a 5-0 run. I don't remember the exact score. But then Jaden Nunn came down. The crowd was getting into it. You could feel the momentum shifting a little bit. And then Jaden Nunn just hit a cold-blooded step back three against a pretty good defender in Braden Smith. He played really good on the ball defense. And I thought that really took the heart and soul out of Colgate. And they were probably like, at that point, we're not winning this game. You know, let's dial it back a little bit. You know, I mean, of course they didn't do that, but it, to me, that was a big play and really just established Baylor's dominance the rest of the way. You know, Jalen Bridges was terrific in the second half. Josh Ojewuna off the bench played really well. You know, Eve, I don't know if it's a rib. Did you get any clarity on what the injury was there? I've heard shoulder, I've heard rib.
I didn't talk to him in the locker room. He was talking to TV people, then kind of went back and showered, so I was hitting the rounds right otherwise. But I saw Darby Brown, also sometimes associated with 365, and yeah, great TV reporter in Waco, mentioned that he said his back really bothered him when he woke up, and it was still giving him some problems in the locker room, and then he was hopeful he could go on Sunday. So that obviously would be a wrench if, say, Baylor takes one more injury in the round of 32.
Yeah, we need him badly, because obviously Clemson, where they're strong, is the front court, and their back court probably – isn't as powerful. They have good players in their backcourt, but not the strength of the team. The front court is the strength of the team. So it's going to need to be all hands on deck for that one. But yeah, I think his teammates, you know, I noticed Jacoby once the big from Colgate backed him down a few times, Jacoby was, you know, in his face, like, come on, man, be tougher. You know, like, I thought Jacoby's body language was really good and, you know, very urgent, which I love to see from a freshman. You know, sometimes I think PJ Hall played like this for Clemson yesterday. It's like, you're a senior, you know how important it is every possession. And he played with that urgency. I thought Jalen Bridges played with that urgency. I thought Ray J. Dennis played with that urgency. And it's really good to see guys like Jaden Nunn and Jacoby Walter also play with that urgency. You know, and I think I'm going to give Eve a little bit of a pass because he was hurting, but there just wasn't that like toughness, you know, from the get go. I mean, he played well, he did some good things, but you know what I'm saying? I got back down a few times and Josh played much better position defense in that game. And you're absolutely going to need that against Clemson because they got some grown men and we got to put our big boy pants on to beat those guys.
Yeah. When we turn to Clemson, Ashley, good stuff from what you've said. Obviously, it really starts with PJ Hall. You referenced him, one of the best players in the ACC, been a KenPom top five player all year. Sam Vecenie, the Athletic, has him early in the second round in his mock. When I look at the matchup for him, one key thing I think will be on the perimeter. The North Carolina game, Clemson's best win is they beat Carolina at Carolina.
Yep.
And in that game, PJ Hall hit several threes because Carolina basically dared him to shoot. He's hit 32% of threes on the year. I know Scott often doesn't like to leave guys open that are competent, so I'm guessing Baylor will do something with him, but it's hard to trap the ball and also guard PJ Hall. So one of those things for Baylor will be, if you play man-to-man, can you really handle PJ Hall? And if you go zone, he's a pretty good passer, and Clemson has pretty good passers. So that's my concern, is can Clemson do a little bit of what KU's done against Baylor in the zone, where they pass Baylor out of it, Baylor has to go man. I don't know how that works. I know Baylor opened in man, obviously, yesterday. I think Baylor likes the toughness factor up. Wow, Memphis is starting to hit me. Day three. How do we make it in a city like this? But the toughness factor, I think, opening in man exists. I don't know what Baylor will ultimately open up in, but I think PJ Hall is the first part of the game plan. And then the old Clemson guard, who, or not the old Clemson guard, the old Syracuse guard,
Syracuse,
who was there for 19 years, transfers in, elite three-point shooter. Baylor has to go over every screen tough or just switch those screens to do that. Made over 40% of a huge number of attempts from three, likes to just fire it in a second, can shoot off the bounce. So you can't sleep on him on the perimeter like you might be able to against Colgate, where Cox wouldn't shoot at all from three. Not going to happen with Clemson. So need right. to get aggressive on defense and kind of take the fight to Clemson, because other than maybe North Carolina, Clemson's not going to face a team with the talent Baylor has that can also play aggressive and in your face. So Baylor, as you mentioned, Ashley, got to bring the fight the first 4 minutes of the game.
Yeah, I agree with all of what you said. They have an interesting player, number four, Ian. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Shefflin, maybe. He's a 6'8", 240-pound. Some of the old-timers that are listening to this might remember a center for the Milwaukee Bucks named Paul McCaskey, who was just kind of a big, you know, big body and a little doughy. Like, he's not a guy that you look at and say physically he's imposing, but he's averaging 10 points and 10 rebounds a game. He makes really good decisions. So he's, you know, one of their front court players. And I was also really impressed when we were watching the New Mexico game at RJ Godfrey off the bench, a sophomore, another, you know, just physically imposing, you know, big guy. You know, they got some size. I mean, they start, you know, three guys on paper that are, or actually four guys, or three guys that are over 6'8", and then they bring a couple 6'8", 6'10" guys off the bench. So they really have some quality size. Jalen Bridges is going to have to be huge. I thought Jalen played terrific defense against Colgate. I was kind of focused on him, and he just does a really good job of not allowing his man, you know, to really get to their spots. Like, when, you know, they would, their bigs would back down Eve or sometimes even Josh, but when they tried to do that against Jalen, it just wasn't effective the few times I remember. So I think, you know, Jalen's going to be a huge factor in this game. Got to stay out of foul trouble. You know, it's going to be an interesting matchup. I think Baylor has the advantage in the backcourt, and our guards are going to give them problems. You know, if Jaden Nunn keeps playing like the way he's been playing, it's, you know, very difficult, because, you know, Ray J is such a good passer. He's good at finding open, you know, guys. Obviously, Jacoby hits a big percentage of his shots and is a threat. And then Jalen Bridges. And then if you leave Jaden Nunn open, you know, it's like, you know, he's almost automatic from three when it's open. So I feel like, you know, Baylor is going to have the advantage because of the backcourt play, but it will be certainly a tough road to get to the Sweet 16. And they definitely need a healthy Eve. And I think Caleb's going to play a big role off the bench. And Josh obviously is going to play a big role off the bench as well.
I think so too, Ashley. And with the last two tournaments exits, both, you know, tough opponent North Carolina in that 1-8 game, tough game against Creighton that really should have been in the Final Four last year, if not for
Right.
some issues against San Diego State late. Clemson is good. You
Right.
know, if Clemson's listening to our podcast, we're not trying to give them bulletin board material. But, you know, Baylor should win this game. Baylor's more talented. John, especially when I talked to him, really recognized it's been tough for them that the last two seasons they've been the higher seeded team, have lost that second game. I think that really motivates some of the guys in the locker room, even with new faces. Jalen played a lot last year, plays a lot now. John is still on the team. Langston will be around in the locker room to remind the guys, hey, this is a game we need to win. Baylor needs to be a second weekend team just about every season. I think that motivation's really there for the Clemson game. So I don't think they're going to overlook Clemson or be soft against Clemson. I think they've got the right mindset going into this one. And so I'm feeling pretty good right now about where Baylor is. I don't know, Ashley, what's kind of your prediction or what are you assessing for this game?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, the quality size that Clemson has, they're not a very good offensive rebounding team, which is really surprising as I look at the numbers. They're 221 in offensive rebounding percentage. You know, Baylor is all the way up to 102 in defensive rebounding percentage. That's got to be the best defensive rebounding percentage for a Baylor team in a really long time. I'd have to go dig into the numbers, but I know that's always been a weakness, you know, for Baylor teams in the past. They've always been terrific on the offensive end and not so good on the defensive end. It's kind of the reverse. Clemson's very good at defensive rebounding, 50, and Baylor's really good at offensive rebounding, 23. You know, so those are some things that I think, you know, whoever can be tougher on the glass, I think that's going to be a key thing. You love the fact that, you know, strength of Clemson's not, you know, 3-point percentage defense. You know, Baylor's number four in the country in that area. So hopefully we can get open threes and make them. I think it's going to come down to, you know, who's tougher in the paint. Baylor doesn't necessarily have to have their big score in the paint, but I think their guards have to get to the paint, get to the rim, get on the foul line. Jacoby did a really good job of that against Colgate, shot 10 free throws. You know, if Baylor can shoot 10 or 12 more free throws than Clemson, I feel really good about the Bears' chances of advancing. You know, I think the Bears have the advantage. The betting line's 4, but all the advanced analytics have like a 2-point spread. You know, KenPom and even Miyakawa and Hazelmetrics and Torvik all have it kind of in that 2-point spread. So they see it as a closer game, but I do think the Bears have the advantage. The crowd should be kind of neutral. I'm not expecting a real big advantage one way or the other. They're both about 7 hours away from this spot. So I think you'll see a pretty decent representation of Baylor folks and a decent representation of Clemson as well. But, you know, I think, and of course the game after that's the Aggies in Houston. So once that Nebraska fan base cleared out, I don't know what the crowd's going to look like on Sunday. I suspect it'll be sold out, but you know, it might be a lot of locals just coming to watch good basketball.
It may be. And as you mentioned, Nebraska, I thought, probably had twice as many fans as any other team this weekend.
Right.
Didn't really see a large Aggie presence, not a large Houston presence. The Baylor fans that were here were impactful, but not a great Baylor turnout overall. Sorry to say, but the ones that were here, great job for those of you that were here. And I'm leaving Sunday, so I'm not, you know, going to cast stones on people.
Sure.
I know people got a lot of stuff going on that it's tough to
get.
Well,
I think a lot of Baylor fans are coming. You know, it's those early games on Friday or Thursdays are always, you know, problems for some people because they have work or school responsibilities. But I do think you'll see a decent amount of Baylor fans here on Sunday.
That is good to hear. And then, you know, they say the Baylor of the West is LA. So hopefully we'll get a good Baylor turnout in LA. But yeah,
first things first, we got to advance, but yep. Yeah, no, I agree with you that I think we will turn out in LA if we get this win.
And my score prediction, I think now looking at it, is I think Vegas is onto something that Baylor's a little bit better than Clemson vis-a-vis the metrics.
Yeah.
Maybe the one hang up you have is that Evan Mia now has the stat about opponent adjustment. And do you do really well against poor teams? And do you do kind of poorly against good teams? And he does have Baylor doing a lot better against bad teams. But recently, Baylor, I thought, has played at a more elite level against those good teams, whether it's KU, Texas.
Right.
Other than Iowa State, which was a road game in Kansas City and much tougher than even Hilton, having been in both venues many times.
Right.
Baylor's in a lot better. Clemson does tend to play better against bad teams, but I like Evan Mia a lot, and I like the concept of this, but I think the stat kind of suffers that the sample size is too small, and you really got to watch the games to know, is the analytics capturing something here? So, like, Houston just pounds bad teams no matter what, right? Kelvin Sampson, I think, basically just tells the guys, I will kill you if you don't beat Longwood by 40, or I will, you know, frame you for wire fraud if you don't beat this sub 300 KenPom team by 50. I don't know what he does, but he gets them to play hard when they're up by 50. I think there's something to that. I think Clemson is really living on. They played Duke close. They beat Carolina at Carolina when they took and made quite a few threes. I think they went 11 of 31 from deep. I don't think that happens for Clemson. I think PJ Hall has a big game. I don't think the rest of Clemson has a big enough game. I'm taking Baylor 76-68.
Oh, an 8-point spread. I like how you're thinking. I think it's going to be closer. I think it's going to be a nail biter. I think it's going to be in the 80s. I see this as Baylor 81, Clemson 80, something along those lines. Yeah, so I think it's going to be a close game that is decided in the last 2 minutes. You know, it's interesting if you look at Clemson's body of work. They did some good things in the non-conference, including a pretty solid win against TCU. They beat Alabama, and I believe that was saying it's an away game. Is that a true road game against Alabama? I'm looking at where it was played, Coleman Coliseum. Yep. So they beat Alabama on the road, beat Pittsburgh, South Carolina. You know, they got some good wins this year. I mean, in ACC play, they were really inconsistent. They end up the season 11-9. Then they get crushed by Boston College in the first round of the ACC tournament. And then New Mexico is a hot team coming in, you know, tore through the Mountain West Conference and route to a title, played a lot of zone against Clemson. I don't know if that, that'll be interesting to see what Baylor does, because they really carved up New Mexico's zone pretty well, I thought, in that game. And, you know, they beat them by 21. So yeah, Baylor, you know, certainly took care of business against Colgate, but, you know, Clemson's got to be confident after New Mexico was kind of the betting favorites, and they were able to take care of business in that first round. So we'll see what happens Sunday, but should be an interesting matchup. You know, I wonder if Jonathan will get some minutes in this game. I mean, their front line's so good. You know, I think obviously if Eve is a little bit hindered by injury, you know, I think it might be a time for Jonathan to step up and, you know, really give us some good minutes. And I was encouraged by what Jonathan did, you know, just, you know, confidently hitting that three. I just think there's going to be a time in this tournament where we're going to need some good minutes from him. And that time may be Sunday.
I agree. And Clemson likes to drop the big man into the paint or only have him come to the level of the screen.
Right.
Which means those pick and pop threes are really going to be there.
Yeah.
And
he's the one guy that can hit them on the roster.
Yep. And it's kind of unique when you get to the deeper scouting reports of, okay, this guy only plays 3 minutes a game, or he's not a key contributor because he was not in the rotation for most of the season.
They don't pay attention.
Freshman year, LJ Pryor on that,
right.
not in the rotation. So I don't know if Clemson's going to come into the game being like, wait a minute, you mean to tell me this headbanded man hits threes? I wouldn't believe it. And then he'll hit a couple threes and it would be phenomenal. In an ode to Corey Jefferson against KU in 2013 on senior day, we're talking about a big man coming off the bench and doing it. Obviously, I like John a lot. I've known him for his whole time at Baylor, done a lot of profiles on him, talked to him for years. He's one of the first guys I talked to when the locker room's open. Probably talked to him a little today. Obviously, you want Eve to go, but I got some faith in John. And I also kind of like if John plays, if PJ Hall beats him, I think John will just foul him like crazy. And I think that could also establish some toughness for Baylor. That's just like, you know, you don't want him to go to the monitor, but they're going to the monitor because John just whacked him in the arm because he's going to say no easy buckets. So I do think this is a game, because Clemson is not super athletic, that they can take advantage of John on the perimeter. I think John knows the defense well. He'll communicate well. He could hit a couple threes. And so I do think this is a good John game. It's not like they have bigs that can space the floor, switch out on the perimeter, do all those kinds of things. You get a little worried about John post-injury. So I agree with you there, Ashley. I would love for all John's done for Baylor, for him to get a run in the tournament where, you know, everyone's going crazy about the kind of shots he's making, what's he doing, as opposed to, you know, Big Blue Nation obviously in the toilet, UCLA not in the dance, Indiana not dancing. Absolute shambles for so many of the Blue Bloods. To see John do something would remind you it's good to have older guys, what they bring to the program, what they can do. And absolutely hysterical. I'm walking back from the arena yesterday. A guy with a mask and a Big Blue Nation hoodie on has to sign Fire Calipari and is just shouting it. And it's like, sir, Kentucky's not even in this region. What are we talking about? But a lot of restless fans right now. Good to see Baylor is not restless and has a real shot to make a run. Because as we've mentioned time and time again, this was the perfect region for Baylor. The South region is wide open. You don't have to worry about Kanzaki to go for 50. What can happen with Houston? Connecticut being the best team. This is a wide open region. And if we were doing a Rothsteinism, because he said at the end of our row, when we all were trying to get out, and oh my God, the spacing, unbelievable spacing.
Yeah.
But I would call this the region of revenge, because Baylor has the chance to play Arizona and beat Caleb Love after what he did in the tournament.
Yeah.
And then you can knock off Carolina to stop them from going to the Final Four.
Or Michigan State, who put it
on
them.
I didn't think about that one.
Yeah.
So the region of revenge lives on for Baylor. I think they get it done against Clemson. And I'm feeling more optimistic about the region of revenge going Baylor's way, right now, actually.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, I think you got to feel pretty good after that opening game performance that Baylor can make a run here. They look good in that game and certainly gave you some reasons for optimism. I think the defense has got to, still be grittier. You made shots against Colgate. You moved the ball really well. Offensively, it was a thing of beauty. Do you remember what the points per possession were? Was it like 1.45 or something along those lines?
Yeah, first half Baylor ended up something pretty crazy, I think, in the one quarters.
All right, I'm going to look it up on the KenPom real quick. Yeah, I think they ended up like at 1.1 or 1.05 on defense, which is solid, and 1.44 points per possession on offense, which is ridiculous. I mean, obviously you're not talking about you're talking about a top 150 team, but a team that, won 25 games. I mean, they're a good team, and Baylor really put it on them offensively. I think if, Baylor can get to the 1.15, 1.2 against Clemson, then I feel really good about that outcome. Yeah, they did. That first half was something. They had 54 points, only scored 9 in the first 10 minutes of the second half, but then poured it on with 29 points, thanks in large part to the threes by Austin Sachs and Jonathan Chumba-Chachua at the end of the game.
Yeah.
That really helped the offensive efficiency numbers. But, they were great open shots, as a result of good offense. And I think at the time, Colgate still had their starters in. They emptied the bench right after that. But, it was a terrific first opening round game. All right, so what are your thoughts on Memphis in general? Is this your first time in the city, Kendall?
I was here for a couple of days when I was in high school, but the first extended look in adulthood into Memphis. There are things I like about the city. I think it'd be a good place to live, unlike other regions of the country where I mentioned I don't think they'd be good places to live, not calling out any place. I'm not trying to get people in my DMs going crazy, because I will fight back now. I'm not going to be as kind as I was in the past. If anybody wants to get worked up, I'm not insulting any location. But I do think it'd be a good place to live. You got the Grizzlies. You got the Pyramid. I'm really excited to go see these Peabody Ducks in a minute. D-U-C-K-S, if the transcription services fails me there. So I'm excited to see that in a minute. So I like all that stuff. I guess my only thing is, I don't know if this is a great NCAA host site. Because we all found the Green Beetle. And you all found it. And I've joined along a couple times. And that's been a great bar, but it's a little bit of a walk from the arena.
Right.
And if it's one of those spots where it's like, well, if every fan base were as intelligent as Baylor fans, like if you had, let's say, Gonzaga fans or some of the Yale fans, obviously, if you had some of the intelligent fan bases in the second round, they would have found this bar too. And
sure,
it'd be too packed to survive. But the bars in the Beale Street area, there are no great sports bars. We found out when we went to Flying Saucer day one.
That's
kind of
amazing. The lack of televisions in these sports bars is pretty incredible. Yeah, it is surprising.
Yeah, like you compare it to Indianapolis, Kansas City, even Phoenix, Phoenix you got to drive a little bit, but that's kind of my complaint for Memphis is the sports bars aren't quite as good. But I had a real good dinner last night. The people here are very friendly. You get a little bit different flair of the Southern accent. Waitress we had, Brittany, has a real cool Southern accent. And so I've liked that a lot, but what are your thoughts on Memphis generally, Ashley?
Yeah, we had some great experiences with Brittany's yesterday. We had a really good waitress at the Green Beetle named Brittany, who took good care of us. But for breakfast, we went with Bear Claw, Mall Bear, ATX Traveler. We went to a breakfast at a place closer to the Arrive where I'm staying, and there was another Brittany, and she was something else. She was a stand-up comic, and so she was I think practicing a lot of her material on us and made for a very entertaining breakfast. So shout out to the Britneys in the of the world there. We've had some good Britneys as hostess waitresses here in Memphis. I like the city. I don't know, the downtown area, it reminds me a little bit of New Orleans, Bill Street, without obviously the strip clubs and on Bourbon Street, but you have lots kind of a similar, jazz, blues, type of focus. It's got a lot of history, obviously. We haven't made our way down to Graceland. The team is staying, at the hotel near Graceland, and they say the hotel is nice, but there's not a lot to do. Maybe not the best area of town down there as well. So that may be good for Baylor because you're eliminating distractions. You don't have, you're not staying at the West End right next to the arena and lots of bars and Bill Street, right next door. So maybe that's a good thing. But overall, I would give Memphis a solid grade as far as a place to watch basketball. But like you said, for the reasons you said, it's not my favorite place. Just from, things to do, sports bars, with TVs, that's a little lacking.
I do like
I do
the
like that.
possible hot take here, Ashley, of should Baylor stay in the worst possible neighborhood imaginable
Yeah.
at every tournament or every road venue, so the guys are too scared to leave the hotel, to talk to any of the rough and tumble women, to make a friend with any of the men. This could be the new analytics, the new money ball. Stay in the roughest area imaginable. Like take private flights to the roughest area imaginable. You got police escort, you're good to go, no distractions. DoorDash doesn't even want to come to your hotel. They're so scared. This is the new money ball. I like it.
Well, and not that the place we stayed at in Ames when we watched that New Year's Day game when Baylor beat Iowa State a couple years ago. But I mean, that's another example. I mean, there was nothing to do except try to crash a wedding, which we were unsuccessful, or we decided not to, I guess
The bride
is
crying in the
one way to put
hallway.
it. Right. Yeah, so that may be a good point. Now, the NCAA does assign the hotels, so I don't think Baylor chose this location. And Baylor got the second best hotel according to slotting. I think Houston's at the Peabody. And then Baylor got this hotel, south of town. And that from what everybody says, it's a really nice hotel, just not a lot to do around the area. So you have to, come back to Memphis, downtown area, or go elsewhere to find some interesting things to do. But Baylor's got their focus on, this is a business trip, and LA, will probably have more distractions next week if they're able to make the Sweet 16. But I do like the fact that there is a lack of distractions where they're staying. I think it's a good thing.
Hopefully, LA, if it happens, goes the other direction. Obviously, these guys are all going to be quite wealthy playing basketball, but I went to
Right.
LA 5 years ago after a couple of buddies of mine went to the Santa Monica Boulevard. And this is when I was a single man, but we go to this club. And I remember getting there, and the women were all so attractive. I was like, it would be insulting for me to even talk to these women because they're not going to want to talk to me. They're not going to want to hear what we have to say. And like, anytime like a woman would come up to us and, shouts to the old Indianapolis days. I would be
Right.
like, fellas, the only way a woman's talking to us here is if she is trying to get some money on us or is trying to rob us. So do not talk to any of these women here. We got to get out of this club. Again, dangerous the other direction. If they're
Right.
looking like they're all in Hollywood, they're not looking like they want to be with you. This is why, there is a risk to LA. We need those good NCAA tournament cities like Indianapolis where you can get, some good looking women. But not the Hollywood women that are going to try and identity theft you, get your bank account information, none of that stuff.
Yeah.
So, we will talk about the challenges of LA next week. And I hope we get to talk about those challenges about fellas, don't be talking to the girls in the club. Don't be doing that kind of stuff. A whole different animal out in LA. Not all
Yeah.
LA women, if there are LA women on this podcast listening to it right now, but some LA women, protect yourselves, go to the Santa Monica Boulevard and have a good time. But if you go to the club and they all look like they're Kardashians, looks like you don't need to be a reality TV star quite yet.
These guys seem like they're really locked in. They're most of them, if memory serves me right, have very committed girlfriends, that are long-term girlfriends. So I think they are I mean, you never want to say you're not susceptible to temptation, but I do think these guys have their heads on the right spot. And it was good focus that opening round. Hopefully we'll see that Sunday against Clemson. So you're calling for an 8-point win. I'm calling for a 1 or 2-point win. It would be good to get a win no matter how we do it. I do think, you know, I'm okay. This is something I'm curious about. I noticed against New Mexico, Clemson didn't seem like a big ball pressure team. And those are the teams that have given us trouble, you know, teams that will hit us hard with a lot of perimeter pressure. So I'm going to look at their, oh yeah, they're one of the worst in the country at turning teams over. So that's good for us. I like that stat. They also do take care of the basketball. They're number 47 and not turning it over. So they're not a big ball pressure team. They're going to use their size, try to make you take difficult shots. They're decent in the defensive metrics, number 47. You know, Baylor's now number 74. You know, but the offense obviously is better for Baylor. Number 5, Clemson's number 25. So that's just kind of how KenPom sees it from the analytics. But a lot of that work was done in the early season for Clemson when they got off to such a good start, and they kind of faded down the stretch. But you know, obviously, like we talked about, a good win against New Mexico.
Yep. Yeah. Baylor destroys conservatism like Gerald Ford at the 1976 Republican convention. The folks said we couldn't reference Ford Reagan 76. We did it before 10 a.m.
I love it. Always good to get some political takes, some historical political takes from Kendall Cal. All right. Well, I think we'll call it a wrap. Some good thoughts on Clemson. Safe travels back. I know you got to go back to Kansas City. You got a trial on Monday, right? Is that why you have to be back there?
A long series of motion hearings on Monday for at least one defendant who has not created a website while on the run for murder against me. So you take the victories where you can get them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, hopefully this will go well for you. And I'm sorry you're going to miss the game on Sunday. I'll be there. Jack McKenzie will be there representing Sikkim 365. You've been listening to a Ring Before Spring podcast with Ashley Hodge and Kendall Cout, Sikkim Bears.